when I try to draw or paint what I'm trying to describe, it's impossible. Painting feels more like I'm on a stage solo and it's very lonely. I don't know what to do. But when I work with fabric, the beauty of it is fabric comes with their own personality and their own pattern, their own materiality. So fabric is reaching out their hands to me first, like, oh, here I am, work with me.
You're listening to Seamside, where we explore the inner work of textiles. I'm your host, Zach Foster, and today we sit down with textile collage artist Umin Kim. Before we hop into this conversation, just a huge word of gratitude for all the generous folks over at The Nook. I couldn't do projects like Seamside without you, and the fun that we're having with Destroy This Quilt, forget about it. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you so much. If you're interested in joining us on The Nook, we got a spot at the table for you. Just check out the link in the show notes below for your free trial. And I'll be there right on the other side to welcome you with warm, quilty arms. Just a quick update. You may have noticed that a few of your favorite show notes features seem to have disappeared. Take heart. They haven't really gone completely. I just moved them to the episode website. So if you're looking for things like images of the pieces that we talk about in this conversation, the transcript, those reflection prompts, people love those journaling prompts based on themes that we talk about here on Seamside. And as a new feature, three artists that our guests think that everyone should be following, all of those are now Seamside extras, free of charge, waiting for you over at the episode website. So click on the Seamside Extras link in the show notes below to see so much more about this conversation. Now y'all listen to this review from Mandy Cat G, who said, listen to Seamside is like going to a great restaurant. Where is this going? Let's find out together. Mandy Cat G said, I have been enjoying listening to Seamside as I drive. I feel like I'm sitting in on a conversation with friends. Zach is a great host and storyteller and somehow makes me feel like I'm there in the room with him. It reminds me of a feeling I get at a wonderful small restaurant. I feel like I'm a guest in someone's home. Thanks, Zach, for letting us in, for sharing, and encouraging. Mandy, I love that idea of you and me and Seamside folks just sitting around the table. And if y'all know what Mandy's talking about, you enjoy the intimacy of these creative conversations, I sure would appreciate your generous 5-star review on Apple Podcast. It not only lets me know what you think about the show, which brings me joy, it's also the best way for other folks to find the magic that is Seamside. So thank you very much. Now on to today's conversation. Every time Umin's work pops up on my social media feed, it's like an instant quilty dopamine hit. Her appliqué wall pieces depict scenes from both her life here in Queens, New York, and back home in Korea. And you don't have to see very many of her pieces to realize that her world is abundant in storytelling objects and almost completely devoid of those pesky and interfering humans. To hear her talk about how in her previous sculpture practice, she often felt alone, solo on a stage performing by herself. But now, having connected with fabric, she feels she's never alone, that she's surrounded by the rich narratives that textiles can carry. In this Seamside conversation, Umin and I discuss why objects make for better storytellers than human beings, how to capture a sense of home, no matter where you may be in this moment, and what our daily spaces reveal about the heart of us. I hope you enjoy How to Tell an Honest Story with my good friend, Umin Kim. Umin, welcome to Seamside.
Hello, very nice to meet you virtually.
Yeah, likewise. You and I chatted a few days ago on the phone.
Yeah.
And it was such a treat to see the person behind all these beautiful quilts I've been seeing on Instagram for the last many months. So thank you for joining me and us here today to share a little bit about yourself, your life, and your practice. Can you describe where you are for us right now?
Yes, I am sitting in my home studio right now, which is total mess at this point because I just moved back from my residency at the Material for the Arts. So yeah, all my stuff that I literally just moved out yesterday. So
wow. So listen, from what I'm seeing, it looks really cute, but I know what life is like off camera. So I want to talk to you about Material for the Arts, but I just have so many questions for you, Umen. I think some of the first quilts of yours that I first started noticing were, and do you mind if I call them quilts? Do you call them?
Of course.
You call them quilts?
I don't call them quilts mostly because I don't feel like I know about quilt enough to call my work quilts. My background is sculpture, my undergrads, grads, all my background sculpture. I just feel like I'm not, authorized enough to call my work quilt or call myself quilter. And I know my work include a lot of not textile element, or my work can bounce to anywhere that whatever floats away from quilts. So I just, to be safe, I call it textile collage or, textile art, whatever broader term. But when people call it quilts, I am, thank you. Whatever people like to call it.
Well, I'm not the authority. I don't know who the authority is. But when I look at your work, it speaks to me like quilts speak to me, right? I see multiple layers of fabric that are all sewn together. Mm-hmm. And that's for me, that's a quilt. Mm-hmm. It's interesting what you say, because I talk to a lot of different people, especially on the Nook and stuff. And there's a lot of folks out there similar to you that I hear variations of this idea, which is, I don't know if I'm a quilter because I don't have a family history of quilting. I don't know if I'm a quilter because I don't have a long lineage of mothers and grandmothers who did this before me. I'm the only quilter I know. And it makes it really hard for people to really enter into this quilt world. Mm-hmm. And so you're saying you have a background in sculpture. Talk us through how you got from sculpture to quilts and how it feels to be in this world where other people look at you and you're like, oh, you're a quilter, whether it doesn't feel like that to you or not.
My background is sculpture, and something about sculpture, especially grad program. I went to sculpture school, art school in Korea, and then grad school here in the US. And especially my grad program, the sculpture department was all about material. It wasn't necessarily, my undergrad sculpture education was a little bit more focused on traditional sculpture, 3D modeling, how to make human body, all this kind of stuff. But grad program was really do whatever you want and think about material. I think that was more of an ethos of the program. And my material, so it was, some people were working with photography, for example, and they called it's a sculptural project because they involved a lot of 3D element in their final installation or even when they set up a setting. So the understanding of sculpture was very broad. And so that made me also feel very comfortable working with textiles. So even before I started making what I'm making now, I always work with a lot of weaving elements or embroideries or sculpture sewing and cutting fabrics, and all that was part of my work. And what really, how I really started making what I'm making now was during pandemic, actually. So as I told you, I was always working with textile, but in my head, I always wanted to do this textile collage or more figurative work that talks more about my personal stories. But for some reason, I don't know why exactly, but I've been postponing it. And and then there was pandemic and my studio shut down, and I was living with my partner in this small studio apartment at the time, and I just had kitchen table, and that was my studio suddenly. And I bought sewing machine, the most beginner friendly one that I could. And then I just started playing with it, and then I hit it off right away. And then I started digging into that project more and more and more and more. And then I started Sijang Project, which was this project that described Korean market landscape.
And we will definitely get to the market project that you're talking about, because there's a lot of fascinating things there to explore with you. But I love this quilt, your kitchen quilt, and I want to stick with it just a minute. Actually, before we go to your kitchen quilt, Umen, you said something about your sculpture program that reminded me of a conversation I was having yesterday, and I'm wondering what you may think about this. But I was talking to somebody, and we got on the topic of art versus craft, which is an age-old debate, at least here in the Western world, in European-based tradition. She mentioned that that distinction is one that largely comes from European schools of art. And so I'm curious, as someone who's coming from a Korean background and has been through a Korean art program, how do you see art and craft? Is it a distinction? Are they two separate things? Are they the same thing? What comes to your mind with that question?
Yeah, sadly, I think West colonized the whole world much more than we think. So yeah. Even if I'm from Korean art education, it pretty much follows modern, I'm air quoting here, modern art education of the West. So there was the separation from fine art and craft department for sure. But honestly, at this point of my practice, I feel like the distinction is whole big gaslighting of art history. You know, I don't think there is this separation. And I don't, of course, art historians or who studied that kind of division much deeper can answer much more better, of course. But I can only say from my personal feeling of art field. And I really, the more I talk about with somebody who believes that division, I get more confused. I oftentimes don't understand exactly what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Yeah. So yeah, no, personally, I don't think there is separation. And I honestly think craft is actually an answer to a lot of what art world is struggling right now. Because I see a lot of art institutions or art galleries or a lot of, you know, these institutions take it as a mission, whether they're really serious about it or not, they take it as a mission to make their institution more democratic or more public engaged or more accessible. Or I think they really, especially these days, they take it as a mission. But I hear that all the time. And then I honestly feel like it's already solved in art field, who makes craft, who makes textile, especially because I'm working with textile a lot. If you go to like folk art museum, if you go to different kinds of craft institutions, already, you know, a lot of artists themselves are coming from this very democratic background, you know. So yeah, that's also how I feel about craft these days. I'm not, as I told you, I am coming from this art education that is divided, and I belong to sculpture department, which had this big fine art authority. So I exactly know how it looked like, how it sounds like. But at this point, finding this material that I really click to, which is fabric, I feel like, yeah, no neat division.
I love that. It was the word material, when you said it early on our conversation, that reminded me of the conversation I was having yesterday with that other artist, because she was making the point that craft is often associated with material first and concept second, right? And I don't agree with that delineation whatsoever. I don't agree with that separation. But when you were talking about your experience in art school, but you mentioned material, I'm like, wait a second, there's an interesting experience there, or an interesting way of looking at it. So thank you. Umen, I would love to start with this kitchen piece that you've made, because it tells so much of the story just by looking at it, about how you got involved or intrigued with this art form. Can you first describe the quilt for folks that haven't seen the image yet?
So that is describing my studio apartment that I was living and working in Jackson Heights in Queens. And that was right after I did this artist residency program in Queens Museum. And my residency term was towards the end, but also it was pandemic. So they really shut down their public building, I think. So they had really strict code, complete shutdown. So I didn't have time to pull out. If you remember the time, it was quite urgent. So nobody had even time to take any material. So really, literally, I just was sitting in my kitchen table and that was my studio suddenly. So that quilt really described my work setting at the time. So I took over our kitchen table totally. And I took that as an opportunity to self-learn, self-teach myself the sewing practice, because that has been my head for a long time. I know how to sew because I learned it from my mom growing up and everything, but I wanted to really make image out of it. So yeah, I bought the most beginner-friendly sewing machine and I had a lot of fun buying spools because they're so colorful and there's many different pretty ways to set it up. So I set up my table that way. So in this work, you see that table with sewing machine on it and spools. And that was just how the setup of the apartment was. It was right next to a kitchen. So you will see the kitchen at the background. And on the left, it was actually right side in the real life, but I moved it to left side for the composition. But yeah, we had this small, a little bit higher table that has rice cooker. Like it was cooking zone, like coffee maker, the little small cutting board and stuff. So yeah, that's what you see. It was literal description of my live workspace at the time in Jackson Heights.
How interested. So I'm sitting here just gazing at this image right now, listening to you talk about it. And one of the, it's the details, it's the loving care that you recreate these objects in your kitchen and on your sewing table into fabric that confirm for me that these are real objects that really exist in your home. These aren't just things that live in your mind. I'm looking particularly at the, I don't know why this is drawing my eye, but the racks that pots sit on the stove, the black racks, right? The iron racks. It's just such a lovely detail. The little dials on, I assume that's like a small oven, like a little toaster oven or a convection oven maybe, lets me know this is a very real kitchen. So when you're looking at this particular piece, how important is it to you to portray things as they actually exist in your kitchen versus where do you give yourself permission to deviate from the physical reality? Like you mentioned moving the table from the right to the left for sake of composition. Are there other things like that that you allow yourself in creating these portraits of a room?
It's actually not important at all.
Ah, okay.
It's actually beauty of working with fabric. And because when I try to draw or paint what I'm trying to describe, it's impossible. Because I feel like there's nowhere I can rely on. I have to draw it. I have to make a color. I have to, you know, if painting feels more like I'm like solo. I'm on a stage like solo and it's very lonely. I don't know what to do. But when I work with fabric, the beauty of it is I have an idea because I know what my rice cooker look like, of course. It's like white and pink, but fabric comes with already their own personality and their own pattern, their own materiality. So even though I'm like, oh, my rice cooker is white and pink, there's no exact color of that. And I'm not responsible for making exact that color, which I don't enjoy. But fabric is reaching out their hands to me first, like, oh, here I am, work with me. And then that's how my rice cooker becomes in the end in my textile. I feel like I can rely on them a lot. And at some point, it's not important how exactly it looked like my actual rice cooker at all. And, you know, like stove or oven, different kinds of silver, different kinds of black, different kind of shininess of cotton or vinyl or PVC, whatever fabric has their own personality. I rely on them a lot. So in the end, that's what it becomes.
It's a dreamy world. It really is. I mean, it's simultaneously feels like a document, but each pot, each cup, each spool of thread, each pair of scissors has its own life, its own agenda, their own dreams and desires. I mean, it does. I see what you mean when you say that you don't feel like you're alone with these fabrics.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let's move on, if it's a good time, to talk about your market project, which chronologically you say you completed before this kitchen, but it's just good for us to know that the pandemic is really what set you on this path in a lot of ways with sewing. Tell us what it is about this Korean street market project that first caught your interest.
So as I told you, I'm from Korea, and I came to US as adult, which means I was born and grew up in Korea. So my whole life and even early adult life was from Korea. So I'm really attached to the street markets in Korea, because that's where I used to go to snack with my friends after school. If I need to quickly go there, they have everything. It's not just grocery or not just, I mean, there are all different kinds of shijang. Shijang means street markets, by the way. So there's different kinds of shijang. So there is fabric shijang, which means there are buildings after buildings of just fabric, which is where I go Korea these days with empty suitcase whenever I visit. But most of the time you'll see this shijang in neighborhoods that is just every 5 or 10 blocks, you will see this random in between buildings, this small street just occupied with all different kinds of stores. And it's curated in a very organic, local way, not by like Whole Foods, let's say. Mm-hmm. So it's curated in a very, it's not nicely apple next to banana next to, it's everything's right next to everything. So apple right next to suddenly shoes, mm-hmm. right next to suddenly hardware, suddenly next to fabric. So it's a place you can quickly go grab whatever you need for your daily life. So this is place I go. Every time I go to Korea, I say hi to my family first day. Next day, I go to street market and charge whatever items I need, or just go walk around and snack and just charge the energy. So it was deep in my memory towards Korea. It's such a precious place to me. More and more every year I live in the US, this is one of the things that I miss a lot. And then, as I told you, during pandemic time, I was practicing sewing a lot and getting more and more practiced about it. And there was this narrative going on around Asian market in the West, this very xenophobic, inaccurate narrative about it. And it's not new. I always noticed it if I watch some Hollywood movie or something, there is Asian market as always some mysterious place. People are dealing with something unknown. You know, it was just always damp and scary place. And it's just not a narrative that I know about these places. And these kind of narratives, I felt like we really saw the violent consequence of this kind of narrative during the time. Asian markets were the first who shut down. There were actual violence towards people and places. So I just wanted to make this scenery of this place in a way that I know, which feels more personal and accurate to myself. So yeah, each quilt, each textile, I made it as a store. So each fabric piece, each quilt represented each store. So one is fish market and another one is shoe store. And I just installed them together right next to each other, which was how shijang is usually.
Do you have a particular favorite piece in this project? I know, impossible question. If not favorite, maybe one that you feel like tells a particularly good story for what this project means to you.
I started with fish market. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a reason. When I decided to make it, first store I wanted to make was fish market. And I made two of them because I was having an exhibition at some point. It was an opportunity to show more than 10 of them together, which is ideal way to show it because I want this street market atmosphere. But then fish market was dedicated for different show. But I really wanted fish market to be included in one of these 10 works. So I made another one. So I even made two of them. A lot of them are just one. Mm-hmm. Hardware store, shoe store. Oh, I actually made two shoe stores. So yeah, I made fish market first, and then I made it again. And I remember having so much fun because I like going to fish markets. And it was when I visited Korea with my partner, first Shijang I brought him was fish market, which I realized was a little bit of a mistake.
Why do you say that?
Because he said, I've never seen this many dead bodies at the same time. I never thought of it that way.
So it was a lot for your partner to take in all of the sights and all of the smells and
all of the sight. Mm-hmm. And even they process it there, which means they are just caught. It was fish market right next to ocean. It was Busan, which is where I'm actually born and my dad's side's family are. It's a big port city right next to ocean. So they have this huge fish market right after ocean. And then, you know, they will get the fish and they process it there, which means they maybe like skin them or whatever, gut them, really visceral process. And it was too much for, and honestly, at that point, it was a little bit too much for me because it's been a while that I went to fish market. But describing fish, and in Korea, I think here might be the similar, but some country right next to ocean have this common thing. There's many, many, many different ways to eat fish. You eat fish raw, you eat fish fermented, you eat fish dried. So you will really see different kinds of fish, and try to describe that with textile was just so much fun.
And you really see that here. I'm looking at fish market too. And I'm looking at this beautiful little flounder that's out of this kind of softly iridescent gold. One thing that's unexpected to me in this composition, you've included some gloves, some rubber gloves.
Yes.
And it's those kind of details that just give it so much life. And it brings the people into this world that is built out of objects.
Yes, yes. I also, that's something about this street market that I love about, you really see people's labor and people's workstation in Shijang, in the street. It's not just display. Not everything is nicely wrapped, nicely finished, nicely cleaned, pack it in a plastic bag and then put it on a pedestal. Like, it's not that kind of Shijang. There are cutting board. People are using knife with the rubber gloves and they will toss it next to each other, next to the cutting board when they have to wash it. There's water bucket with water in it. There's action that you see. So that's the energy of this street market. You see real thing. You see behind the scene, behind the stage, all together. So it shows what they are much more honestly, much more vividly, much more close to what they truly are. And I love describing that in my work. I don't necessarily include people in my work because it's much easier for me to tell a story or what happened through objects much more than figures. So yeah, I include that in my textile for sure.
Could you say more about that, about your attraction to objects and the storytelling potential of objects instead of people?
So I will talk a little bit about the room series that I'm working on because that is much more about that thoughts. I didn't even realize it when I was making Shijang project, how my work doesn't have figure in it. It just happened. And then it continued. Even after Shijang project, I was keep making the works without figure. There are a couple of works that has figure in it, but most of my work doesn't have figure. And at some point, I got the question a lot sometimes and I thought about it and I felt like I don't necessarily want to include figure in my work. And I think I just really believe in story that is told by objects much more than by people. Because even if objects have very enigma language, it's hard to read them, how to decode what they are telling us, but still they don't lie. They don't deceive. They really show what happened to them. And also, you know, when sometimes people tell the story, it oftentimes is very manipulated or it's manufactured in a way that object doesn't. So I just believe in story that's told by objects more.
I'm interested in what you were saying about how the labor of people in the market is present in your work. And that made me wonder, how do you see your labor in comparison to the labor that you see in the market? So how do you compare your labor as an artist and a storyteller to the labor of the fish vendor or the shoe seller or some of the other stores that you see in a Korean market?
In what sense? Can you be specified a little bit more?
When you're in the street market, the work that people do is very obvious, right? It's very visible. You can see it as you walk through the different stores and the different stalls. I guess, to what extent then is the way you work public and observable? And to what extent is it private and behind the scenes? Maybe that's what I'm wondering about.
Oh, I love that question for some reason.
Take your time.
I think it's something I really am attracted by fabric, actually, because fabric, textile, when you make quilt, everything is there. Your labor is there. And all the stitches or how they're folded, what I talked about, how objects don't lie or how they tell true story, I think that's very true about fabric. I think fabric might be one of these material or objects that tells the most honest story. And I think when I am making this textile collage, it's just there. How, even if when I was, oh, I need to travel, so I'm going to fold this fabric a little bit, that folded crease is there. And when I had to roll it because my sewing machine too small for sewing this big piece, and I unroll it, it's there. So, you know, that...
It has memory.
They snitch everything.
No secrets.
She folded me. So it's a material. I feel like it's a material that really embodies the whole history in their body. You just need to pay attention. So yeah, that labor is there more than any other material that I work with. And I love that. I think that is that really what I told about how I don't feel lonely working with fabric. That's also part of it, because my labor, but they're laboring too. They're moving, they're working on themselves, they're unfolded and folded. they're sometimes resisting against me, they're sometimes working with me, they're working too. So that feeling of unloneliness is there too. I think I definitely love that about working with fabric. Behind the scene is, because my works are hanging, wall hanging structure mostly, and this is also one of the part that I feel a little bit, is it quilt? Because my work is one layer. It doesn't have bedding. It doesn't have backing, which I think people call traditional quilt structure is. But my work is just small pieces of fabric sewn together. So if you see it from the back, it's total mess. Sometimes I hang it in the middle of the room, so I don't intentionally try to hide it necessarily. And if some curatorial decision maker says, oh, I'm going to show the back, I'm like, oh, totally. Okay, that's good. So I don't necessarily obsess about hiding it, but yeah, that's some part that's out of my control, out of intention.
Well, I'd imagine that on the back of your pieces is where you really see the evidence of the labor.
Definitely, yeah.
Have you ever thought about quilting one of your pieces?
You mean making three layers? Mm-hmm. This is the thing. Deciding not to do it was an intentional decision. I think I just made it as, I don't know, maybe because I'm ignorant about this traditional quilt making, it didn't even enter my mind if that was the part that I need to intentionally decide. I just made this image in a way that I felt right about. And now if somebody asks like, oh, what about doing it? That's some additional decision I have to make. So yeah, if it feels right, or if I feel the need, why not? I did not make it because I was against it at all. Mm-hmm. It just happened.
Your pieces are beautiful and whole and they feel resolved. I mean, they are perfect just the way they are. So I'm not implying that they need to be quilted, but it's just something I would wonder, because as someone who is coming from a quilting background, this is step one, right? Make the quilt top. And this would be the quilt top. And there's just something that happens when you add the other two layers and sew them all together. I think the best I've heard it described was by my aunt. So over last summer, she and I made a quilt together. And she was so amazed when she first saw it. So she and I worked on the quilt top. We did that part together. Then I took it home and I quilted the whole thing together, sewed all the layers together. And when she saw it for the first time after that, she was at a loss for words. She was like, oh, it's like you painted it all together. There's something that all those stitches do that paints it all together. So if that's something you're ever interested in, know you can talk to me. I'd be happy to brainstorm with you a little bit.
I want to contemplate on it. It sounds beautiful. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'll think of that.
Yeah. No, and that's a serious offer too. If you ever want to think about the quilting part of the process, I'm happy to talk to you about that.
I mean, I think also one of the reasons that I was hesitating to do it a little bit was because I'm making patch by patch. I think people call it applique, if you want.
Yeah, I think that's the word.
See, my vocabulary is not. So I do patch by patch, and then each patch is already made out of like three layers because there's like thick canvas in it, and then I wrap it with whatever pattern I want to make. So they're already thick, and then I'm stitching them together. So my sewing machine is already suffering when they are going through. They're like, ah! And then having two more layers added to it is unimaginable just because of this physical reason. But actually, now I think about your work, you hand stitch a lot. So it makes a lot of sense if that's the solution. So I'll definitely think about it. Well, thank you for.
Yeah, well, it's just another tool in your toolkit, your artist toolkit. One thing that a lot of hand quilters like to do is go in and debulk the quilt top. So where you have all those layers applique on top of each other, you go in underneath and you cut out all the layers but the one on top. So you're removing a lot of the thickness.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. See, I need serious education.
No, you don't. But this is why artists need to talk to each other. Right? To give each other more ideas. And I'll tell you this too.
Oh my God.
I was recently talking to Rachel Hayes, who makes these giant, similar to you. She says she came into quilting through the back door. That was her expression. And she makes these outdoor pieces out of like industrial grade material that's really thick. So she had to invest in a pretty pricey sewing machine that can sew up to 1 inch of material at a time, which I cannot I just can't even imagine a machine being able to do that. That's insane.
Wow, that sounds like a drill built into sewing machine. 1 inch, wow.
That's a lot of fabric. That's a lot of fabric.
Oh my goodness, wow. This is something people really misunderstand about fabric. You can drill into an inch thick of wood or whatever material. Try drill into 1 inch of fabric. It's impossible.
Yeah, it really is. It's the material has a mind of its own.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it'll do a lot of things, but it doesn't do everything.
Oh, yes. No, no.
Let's go to your room project, shall we? Is this a good time for that? Mm-hmm. Because I find these pieces really captivating. Again, because there's no people there, but there are people obviously in these spaces in very intimate ways. We just don't see them. So can you tell us a little bit about how you were inspired to begin to create these portraits of rooms?
Yeah. So after Xizhang project, my leaf workspace, that kitchen, UC kitchen, that work was first work that I made after Xizhang that wasn't about Xizhang. And I wanted to continue describing daily scenery of my life, my everyday scenery of myself or my friends, my close people, my loved ones, my neighborhood. So I came up with this idea that, so I made my room, and then next one, I knew I wanted to make my mom's room. And I, for the next one, naturally, I was visiting my sister in Korea. I wanted to make my sister's room. So that's three series, my room, my mom, my sister, and I have some friends' work that I want to make next. So I started to think of that work series as almost like a portrait series, but without describing the people necessarily. So it's going to be a portrait series that only describe their room. And I think if you look at the room, personal room of some person, it says so much story about them more than their figure or their looks, because it tells you their habits, their profession, their taste, their lifestyle, or their, if they have kids, sometimes they show it. If they don't, that sometimes they show it. Their religion. My mom's room has this big Mary statue in her room that I've seen for my whole life. So, you know, sometimes people have specific candle that shows their religion. So it tells so much story about that person. So that's how I thought about this project that I'm also hoping to continue.
Is there one, you mentioned your mother's room's quilt, which is gorgeous. It's got the Virgin Mary on the left, a candle, a stack of books, which I'm assuming maybe the Bible.
Yes.
And then some beads, rosary. And then I see like maybe a mirror for getting ready. So what, if you had to put it into a sentence or two, what does this portrait say about your mother based on what we see here, the objects that you've included?
A Catholic retired housekeeper.
Okay.
She took care of our family. She house kept her whole life, which is serious labor. A lot of labor. She's professional at what she does. Whatever advice we need about, my sister has kids, I don't. When she needs some advice about her kids, she call her. Whenever I need some advice about, I don't cook a lot, but every time I try to, I call her and ask. She's such a professional, and her labor and her, I don't know, profession hasn't been respected because of whatever our world is in, like, capitalist, patriarchal, whatever you call it. Her labor hasn't been properly honored, properly respected. So that's how I think about her. She has like life story, her labor that's so rich and dense that I just felt like her retirement has been very difficult. I think she retired because, you know, we are all independent now. So she just doesn't go through this retirement time like other people because there's no proper celebration, there's no proper compensation or anything. And so I think of her room as that like retired housekeeper, how it can look, I don't know, lonely sometimes or a little bit of sentiment into it. And I know she went through that, and she has a little bit of health issue at the same time. And I just know she went through that a lot with her religion. And I don't, because I don't have religion, I don't necessarily relate to exactly what it is, but it just made me happy for her how she says, oh, you know, I sometimes couldn't sleep and I pray and I could sleep better. And I was happy that she has some help like that because she's my mother. In the end, I want her to sleep better. I didn't think of her life necessarily about like Catholicism, but now I think of it as big part of her life, even though she doesn't go to church that much.
Well, you mentioned loneliness in this room. I found myself wondering, oh, where do I see this loneliness? The closet in the background that has the blue fabric that just feels just so open and spacious can also feel lonesome. I mean, we talk about the idea of a empty nest, right? Like when kids leave the house and the parents are left behind, they often refer to that as an empty nest.
Mm-hmm. And probably it's something that not necessarily viewers might notice right away, that because I notice what is not there, which other people might not see because they don't know her. And whenever I visit Korea and seeing her space that doesn't have our stuff, that is all her stuff, but in a not in a way that she used to. Yeah, and my sister's space is much more kind of in action space. Mm-hmm. So she has a job, full-time job that she definitely every night brings to her home too. So her work is definitely spilling into her own space, these documents and all the books and stuff. And she has, at the time, 4-year-old, now 5-year-old son, my nephew. So her workspace is always really intertwined with these child caretaking signs.
Yeah, I mean, you can't walk across the floor of this room without stepping on a toy, right?
Like, no,
it's
no.
So full of this child and this child's life, and also your sister, the mother. You see her bag on the table, I assume. And does your sister still live close to home?
She lives in Korea.
She lives in Korea. Mm-hmm. Is she close with your mom, like geographically?
Yes, they are actually. Okay. Yeah, it's bitter and sweet thing.
Yeah, yeah. What am I seeing in this piece? What am I seeing behind the woven chair that looks like a little line in the background?
Yeah, that's a zigzag sewing. Can you call it embroidery or stitching?
Yeah.
So yeah, my nephew draw on wall all the time, and it's like lower level because he's so small. and this is also something that's sometimes I feel very bitter about my sewing process. There are much more behind that couch and the chair. But sometimes I piece them together because I make piece by piece. And then sometimes I sew them together. A big chunk of detail sometimes just are hidden. So I was like, oh, okay. But I kept it that way. But yeah, that's like the zigzag sewing that shows drawing of my nephew.
I just love the placement because it's not the first thing you notice when you look at this piece. But after you spent some time with it, you're like, wait a second, that line doesn't make sense. But it's a wonderful detail.
Thank you.
Now, what about your own room? You told us about your mom and your sisters.
Yeah, my room is live-work when I was living in Jackson Heights. We moved definitely because I wanted to live and work at home with more space. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Now my workspace is much more divided. That Jackson Heights apartment was just so deep in my memory and deep in my live-work nature. I don't feel like making another one of my own space. Next one, I'm actually thinking about making my partner's mom's room. She's also an artist, and she I don't know, some people have different personality and different way of decorating their room. Some people, religion is really big part of their room. Some people, there's nothing. You don't see, it's just super minimal. Some people are, I don't know, child is big part of their room. Her room, taste is a thing. She loves pink. She loves flowers. Her wallpaper, her bed sheet, it's very dense. I've never seen somebody's room that is so dense with taste, very bold with taste. So I definitely want to make that room next.
So if you need pink fabric, feel free to let me know. We'll find people and they will mail you all the pink fabric you need.
You serious?
100%.
Oh my God.
100%.
My God.
I'm serious. So, Umin, as a way of wrapping up, you said at the beginning of our conversation that you had just closed down all your work at Material for the Arts, where you'd been for the last 4 months. You just brought that home yesterday and it's sitting there in your space. Can you tell us a little bit about that residency?
Sure. So Materials for the Arts is this New York City public organization. They collect donation from all around the city and beyond, I think, from fashion brands, from theater, from museums, from any kinds of, even from individuals sometimes, any kinds of leftover material. And they redistribute it to city public teachers or artists, or at some point they got a huge costume donation from dance studio, and then they redistributed it to teachers who wants to teach their kids some different dance or recital, things like that. So yeah, this is this amazing organization who do amazing job of repurposing, redistributing, recycling material. And this is New York. There's a lot of objects in waste. So it's really crucial to redistribute it. And they have a lot of education programs. And as part of that education program, they have artist residency program. So they have this studio, beautiful studio with huge window, and they invite artists, each, I think, 3 or 4 artists a year. And they just do whatever they want in the studio. And it's right next to this huge warehouse, which has mountains of objects. And artists are free to dig in. They can just dive into this warehouse and use whatever objects they want. And they will bring their own classes or visitors to the studio to show them how these artists are using these objects into their art. So yeah, I started that project, and this place never run out of fabric. This,
I've seen pictures. I know it's true.
You see the rolls, you'll see a little bit at the back of my video that rolls are all from materials from the art. And that might be not even like 1% of what they have. They have mountains of rolls of fabric. So I never had problem finding shades I want, pattern I want, material I want. It was just heaven that way. And at first I thought, oh, I will continue my room project because that's what I have been doing. So I walked in with my own projects. And then first week, after spending 1 week in the warehouse, I wanted to make the warehouse.
Is that all?
Oh my God.
Is that all? Just make the whole warehouse?
It was just because, you know, I love objects. I talk so much today about how I love objects. And it was just, and they have very interesting way of categorizing objects. This is fabric section. This is furniture section. This is arts and crafts section. And there is a section that literally they have tech. I don't know what it is. So there is a section that they don't know what it is. So I was very ambitious. It's only 4 months. And as you can imagine, my work take a while, and just like every sewing project. So I was too ambitious. So at the end of the residency, we have exhibition, and I had this ambitious thought. I want this exhibition just about the warehouse. And I wanted to make like 8 works during 4 months, which is impossible. I ended up just like 4 works.
That still is a lot of work.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was working so hard at some point. But yeah, that's the projects that I did. So I made three big pieces. First one was arts and crafts section, which is loose idea. You can just, they have Kate Spade donation. They make shoe samples, but just one, not a pair, just one side of shoes because it's simple. So they have this like huge bin with just one shoes, each shoes. And they, right next to it, they have this like ribbon trims, and next to it, they have like pens and inks. So the first work was that section. Second work was furniture section. And they say furniture, but you will see once a while some random thing, like this pony from, I think it was part of Carousel, and they put it in a furniture section. So this place have amazing rotation of objects. And you will see random objects popping up and going away all the time.
I love that the furniture section piece that you made has a big green bin and just a single human leg coming out, I assume from a mannequin or something.
Yeah, mannequins for some reason go to furniture sections too. And mannequins are popular. They come in and people take it away right away.
I believe it.
Yeah. So there's this. Also, this green bin is one of the bins that you will see the workers at the warehouse and volunteers pushing all the time because donation comes into this mountain and they put it in a shelves. So there's always this big organized day that people in this place, the staffs are there, the volunteers are there, and the warehouse is such a main space of the organization. And sometimes I see art institutions, the warehouse, everybody has warehouse where they put collections, they prepare the exhibition. It's a lot of labors going in there. There are a lot of important things going in there. But for some reason, the warehouse is always tucked away. And it's the part of the institutions that their labors are not very, it's not very well respected sometimes, or it's always like back of the institution. And Materials for the Arts, what I really appreciated was it's such a main space of the organization. That's the gala happens in the warehouse. The fundraising events happens in the warehouse. They decorate the warehouse with lightings and performers. And so I really loved being there, feeling these energies and seeing the objects all the time and important things going on in this warehouse. So yeah, I really wanted to make that the warehouse project. The exhibition is called The Warehouse, and all the works are titled that way. The warehouse furniture, the warehouse beans, the warehouse racks, something like that.
Oh, and they're just a marvel. They're just a marvel, Umen. I just want to say thank you so much for giving me so much to think about in terms of objects and their storytelling potential and looking for signs of labor where the people may not be visible, but the labor definitely is. I think these are two big takeaways that I'm going to walk away with from this conversation. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening.
I have so much food for thought right now in my brain that I think I'm going to skip dinner and I'm just going to sit around and contemplate. I don't know about you. Now hang in here. Don't stop the podcast yet, because coming up in just a moment, Umen is going to share with us her three top artists that she thinks everybody should know about. So that conversation's coming. Just remember that you have access to those free Seamside extras. If you're looking for the journaling prompts or links to the artists that Umen's about to mention, just click on the Seamside extras link in the show notes to have access to so much more. I hope our paths cross again real soon. And in the meantime, I hope you're up to something good. I hope you're sewing something good. And I hope to see you soon. Maybe on the Nook. Who knows? Umen, I'm curious, who are three artists that you think everybody should be following?
So I am following these three artists. Some of them I met in person and some of them really I just follow on social media. There's this artist, somebody showed me her work, Hangama Amiri. She works with textile and she described different scenery of food tables or market scenery. So something that I really relate to, obviously. And she has all different kinds of scales. Some works are really big, like wall, but some works are small. And her way of using fabric is so free. It's like drawings. It's so free. And I love how she works with the edges, how they are very, I don't know, like how she does it is very free. It doesn't have any, as I mentioned, especially because I have a little bit of insecurity or am I doing the right thing? Isn't it the right way to do it? Seeing her work as huge encouragement when I saw her work, because it made me feel like, oh, okay, just do whatever it makes sense to you, because that seems like what she's doing.
And I guarantee, before you go on to number two, that people out there are looking at your work and feeling very thankful for the inspiration and the permission that your work has given them.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy to hear that.
I'm sure of it. All right. Who else you got for us?
The second artist, I actually had a show with her a couple of years ago. Her name is Yun Jayong. And in English, I think Jayong Yun. And she worked with human hair. Her hair, actually. And she makes this ethereal sculptures. So it looks like pencil drawings floating in the space because they are made out of human hair. So it might look like she made some Korean traditional hat sometimes. She made a skull or sometimes just simple cube. And sometimes it's in a vitrine, but she sometimes installed it in the middle of the room floating. And the floating part is also hair. So it just looked like pencil drawing floating in the room. So yeah, her work is definitely something I follow all the time.
And hair is a fiber. All right. And number three?
Number three, there's a lot of artists actually.
No, I know.
I'm going to pick one person. This person, I know her from school. I went to same school, but I didn't have a lot of chance to know her in person. Her name is Elnaz Javani. And she, oh, you're nodding, you know her work.
Sounds familiar. Keep talking.
Okay. She does definitely quilting or collage, sewing, collage, textile collage, sewing. But she, the work that really, the part that really gravitates me is the embroidery part. And one of the work that she did back in the grad school, I remember, was she covered entire fabric with red stitching. So from far away, it just looked like red fabric, but it's entirely covered with red stitching, embroidery stitching. And now I think she has, I think she, even at the time, I maybe didn't know her very well at the time, but looking at her work more and more, she, her work is always with the mixture of embroidery and textile collage and all that mixed. So I, in the future, I'm thinking maybe I want to paint on certain fabric to make some more rich pattern, or sometimes I want to embroider on a, it's almost like I want to make my own pattern using embroidery or paint sometimes. So yeah, I look at her work a lot to get some inspiration to that direction.
Well, you kind of already did it at least once when you sewed your nephew's wall art, the scribbles that he made.
Yeah, I definitely do that. But I don't know. I think I should really be more assertive. Like, I always doing it. And at the moment, I'm like, oh, I'm doing it. I'm having so much fun. I don't even think about it. But later, I'm like, is this right way to do it? Is it
right way, schmight way? So it's just so funny to... We talked about your work in the conversation, and I'm sitting here looking at the pictures. You can visualize it, but our poor listeners can't unless they look at the images on the show notes, right? Well, now I get a taste of what that feels like, because you're mentioning all these wonderful pieces, and I'm like, oh, I gotta hang up with Umin so I can look up these artists now. So thank you.
I'll send you the right websites and names later.
Wonderful. Yeah. And we'll make sure to get those in the show notes too. Umin, you are such a treasure. I want us to get together one day very soon, maybe do a little sewing, maybe go to Material for the Arts, maybe get a little food, and just hang out. How's that sound?
Sounds amazing. Let's do that.